What is the will? Well, the short definition is, the will is the act of the mind choosing. It's when a person makes a choice. And the choice automatically implies that the person had the opportunity to refuse one thing and to accept another. In other words, in every act of the will, a preference necessarily came first. There are at least two things to choose from. And one of those things was desired over the others. If that weren't true, we'd be stuck in the state of complete indifference. And where there is no preference, there is no choice. And when there is no choice, the will cannot act. And it was that line of thinking that enabled the Cheshire Cat in the movie Alice in Wonderland to have the exchange that he did with the very confused Alice. Do you remember that scene?
But I just wanted to ask you which way I ought to go.
Well, that depends on where you want to get to.
Oh, it really doesn't matter. As long as I can...
Then it really doesn't matter which way you go.
So to will is to choose, and to choose is to decide between two or more alternatives based on a preference. And in every choice, there is a predisposed preference. Again, otherwise we'd all be frozen in time, caught between two choices of equal preference. And if you stop and think about it, that in effect answers our first question about the human will. Is it sovereignly king or submissively servant? The answer has to be, it is the servant. Because there is always something that precedes the decisions of our will to act. Something that causes our will to act. Namely, our desires or preferences. They always come first. The will is servant to the inclinations or preferences of the person. Which makes it easy to conclude. If the will is servant, it can hardly be free, can it? At least not in the sense that it is often used today in the church to develop the false doctrine of the free will choice of man.
Now, at this point, the advocates of free will choice doctrine might say, yes, but isn't my will capable of and responsible for overriding my preferences? For example, what if I prefer to go to the beach, but realize I have a duty to go to work that day? Is it not my free will that overrides that preference? And of course, in a sense, that is true. But the fact is, even in that case, the will is only responding to the desire of going to work because that desire or preference is greater at the time. In other words, while the will is not forced violently by some outside force to choose to go to work, if the choice is exercised by the will to do so, it is only because, at that given time, there is a stronger desire to attend work, given all the other factors of financial obligations, moral duties, keeping one's job, etc., than there is to go to the beach. Each and every time we act, it is because the will follows our strongest inclination of that given time. The order is always, 1. The mind understands the options. 2. There is a preference or inclination for one option over and above the others. 3. The will automatically selects that option. 4. The action occurs.
Which is why, to me, it's so odd that so many people cling to that line of thinking today. But of course, like any error held by sincere people, there's a fairly good reason for that. There's a reason why the free will choice doctrine is promoted today. Because what confuses people, I believe, is despite the fact that the term free will is supposed to only refer to the fact that the will is not forced by some outside force, it's frequently misunderstood today to mean that a person's will has total freedom and total neutrality. And natural inclinations, one way or another, are not even considered. They're not taken into account as something that controls us because they happen very naturally in us. But as is obvious, even by what we've already described, the human will doesn't have to be forced by some outside force or person to be in bondage, because it's always subject to its own inclinations. It will always choose that which it is most inclined to choose. And even knowing just that much about the human will begins to tell the tale of the impossibility of man to act savingly on behalf of himself. Because as we saw earlier, Scripture also tells us of the inclination of the natural and regenerate human heart that
the Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time.
Which obviously, if your every inclination is only evil all of the time, and your will chooses according to the strongest inclination, well, the results are quite predictable. You'll obviously, consistently, and continually choose that which is evil. Which, of course, is not to say that you'd always choose the worst, most immoral behavior possible in any given circumstance, or that you'd never choose outward behaviors that are externally moral. But it is to say that the natural, unregenerate heart bases its bottom line decisions on the things that are in its own personal, selfish self-interest 100% of the time, which means every single act, from the grossest socially unacceptable sin to the most noble appearing externally moral and even socially heroic acts, are all, at the core, tainted with sin and self-motive, no matter how others-centered they may appear to people who observe them, or even to ourselves. And of course, that's the real reason why human secular philosophies and psychologists, and unfortunately many uninformed Christians, insist that it is the will that controls the man, because that philosophy places the will in control, and it also places man higher than what his true evil condition really is.